is classified this kind of a group cohomology. So actually, today we'll discuss something which actually will lead to this result. This result, after today's discussion, I hope I can finish it. It will be very obvious we can have these results. So at least for those Langevin entangled states described by gauge theory, we seem to have a story. And this is not published. So it's Ying Ren gave this talk in this conference in KITPC 2 weeks ago. So you can see his talk online. Now, he didn't even put in the transparency, but it's recorded, so it's no longer a secret. And so basically, this is the picture. So I think the goal for today's discussion is to try to understand these results in some very simple way. Okay. And but to understand this result, we first need to understand the group cohomology results. So this is a basic topic of our first discussion. In our first discussion, we did not talk about the general picture. We just tried to explain the group cohomology using this path integral formulation. Okay, and that's our first discussion. And so let me just summarize a little bit here. And so in the path integral, we discretize space time. Then we put this degree freedom, which is given by group elements, symmetric group elements, on the vertex of space time. And then we try to write down some kind of a path integral. Hopefully, those path integral are example or representatives for those Schwarzschild entangled symmetric states. We call this a symmetric perfect topology or the SPT states. Okay, so the idea is that instead of write down the action, we write down the action amplitude. So this is a action amplitude. So which is a complex phase belong to this belong to U1. So it is a complex phase assigned for each triangle. So this is a story. So how we construct our path integral? We triangulate the space-time. So this is space-time. So this is x. So this is t. And then we assign degree freedom on each vertex. And degree freedom are labeled by the group elements. And when we assign each complex U1 amplitude, which is a function of the group element on this vertex. So that's essentially specified the Lagrangian. Okay, this defines the path integral. Then we multiply all the simplex, the sum over all group elements. This is the path integral. We get the partition function of amplitude. So this is the thing. And then because here we describe a disordered phase. Disordered phase, so this G just fluctuates very strongly. If G fluctuates very, very strongly, then we hope that our F, Gi, Gj, Gk equal to 1. So that's at least give us disorder phase. That means there's no penalty for how G fluctuates. No matter what kind of G we have on each vertex, there's no penalty. So in any case, the G fluctuates arbitrarily, and this would describe a disordered phase. So any paths have equal weight. But actually, this ultimate disordered phase, we can obtain this ultimate disordered phase with a more general choice of this. This choice is too simple. This gives us a trivial phase. Trivial SPD phase. This is too simple. So there is a way to achieve the same goal, but with a more general choice. So the more general choice is that we say this product equal to 1 for any closed the space-time manifold. So if there's no boundary, this always equal to 1. So that also means at least when there is no boundary, this G can fluctuate randomly. We have no Lagrangian correlation, so we get the disordered states. So this is basically this idea. And this one, so this gave us this. But this more general choice can give us non-trivial SPD phase. So that's the idea. So the rest is just a math. That is, say in two dimension, this condition. So we have this co-cycle. Okay. So how to achieve this is that if you know about cohomology, then this is just it. Because in the cohomology, we have the co-cycle which satisfy this condition. So this is a co-cycle condition, but only for two dimension. This co-cycle condition. So once we can use in co-cycle, satisfy this co-cycle condition to construct this kind of stuff. And so there are some technical things that there are some orientation dependence. So each triangle are given by co-cycle, but it's inverse depending on the orientation of triangle and this branch structure. But after you assign this this technical thing, we'll thought through that, then you'll find for every co-cycle, you can obtain some action amplitude, which is a one on a closed surface. And so this will connect why the co-cycle are related to the SPD phase. So basically that's what we did last time. And so maybe I will try to enforce this a little bit, try to argue that indeed if you're using co-cycle to construct path integral, indeed we obtain a non-trivial disordered states. So this is easy to see. But how do you know these disordered states are trivial, in a sense, are shorter entangled? And this is less trivial. I didn't explain this carefully. And because action amplitude are one on any closed manifold for any path, that really means that the G are flattened randomly, so it's disordered. But why such disordered states is a shorter entangled states? So why one can see that? And so the way to see this is the following. So first we construct the wave function using the path integral. To use path integral to construct wave function is very simple. We just do the integration over the universe, you know, probably something like this. So basically, we have a space time with a boundary. So this is our boundary, and we just and this is like in the middle is like a t equal to, it's like a t equal to minus infinity. That's a big bang. The big bang happened here. And then at the boundary, we have a t equal to zero. So therefore, this path integral on the disk can represent evolution from the big bang to the current time, to this current time slice, which is the boundary. Yes? Yeah, this is a, I'm going to use that. And so far is general, you know. Usually space time have a very complex triangulation, so we have very fine triangulation. Then we do the path integral from minus infinity to something current time. Then the boundary, I mean, the sum over all things, the z from path integral would only depend on this gi on the boundary. And this is actually our wave function. This is actually became our wave function. Yes, this, once you do the cut, the degree freedom became GI. So GI really means, when I say degree freedom labeled by GI, that means on every vertex, we have a Hilbert space whose dimension is the dimension for number of group element. So every basis are labeled by the group element. So this is a very special choice of Hilbert space. And so therefore, the wave function is a function of a GI on each vertex. Okay. And then here is the Renoirian group works. This kind of co-cycle defined path integral is very special. It's a fixed point path integral. This we mentioned last time. That is, it have a property that once you fix boundary, you get the path integral. Then any retriangulation inside do not change this path integral. And one example for that is, suppose you do the Pine's theorem on this kind of space-time, so where the boundary is fixed. But you can easily see that this is equal to this one. So that's a retriangulation. So basically, the two cocycle, this cocycle times this cocycle happening to this cocycle times this cocycle with proper orientation dependence. So the G1, G2, G3, G4. So this is a fixed G1, G2, G3, G4. And also, one can show that if you add a point in the middle, this is one cocycle equal to product of three cocycle. Okay. So therefore there is a but these two from these two elementary moves we can show that any retriangulation inside the disk do not change the path integral. So therefore the path integral are equal to this path integral. We can shrink all the space-time into one point in the middle. Sometimes we can even you remove this, we just put this all in the boundary. But let me just add this, the middle one. So this is greatly simplify our calculation for this. We just once we have this, we can write down the wave function. But here I choose we choose a particular branching structure, this arrow structure, so that all the triangle are plus. Basically, you can see this goes like this. So this is a plus. This is two dominant arrow here. There's only one opposite arrow. So they're all plus. So therefore, this sign structure is all plus. So therefore, the wave function is just this one. So this is the exact ground state wave function determined by the cocycle. Once you know the cocycle, you can write down the ground state wave function. And once I write down the ground So wave function, I can explicitly show that this ground state wave function is a short-range entangled. It's not long-range entangled. Yes?
Are we missing a Sam-over configuration of this parallel?
Yes. So this is, I should say, the proportional.
But even that, the wave
That's function. Right. And you can show that this is independent, very important. They're independent of G star. So G star can be chosen to be one identity operator, identity element. You can choose to be one. The reason is falling. You can see that when you're choosing different G star, this is like you have to choose different disk. But when you put two disks together, it should be identity. So therefore, the different choice of G star will not change the value of a disk. Maybe I'm too quick.
Yeah, what do you mean?
So we have one disk here, we have another disk here. So this one for the G star, and this one for the G star prime. And we know that putting these two together gave us a sphere, an evaluation sphere is equal to one. And this is true for any choice of G star prime, because for any choice of G star prime, the boundary match this boundary. And these two put together, you get a one. So no matter how we choose G star prime, these two together always equal to one, but this one is not changed. So this one also cannot change. So this is some amazing relation here. So therefore, this is so we get this way. But
what does this have to do with all the triangles being positive?
Nothing. It's just if you choose different branching structure, there should be some sign here. But the thing is that here, whenever you have a space time, you always choose a fixed branching structure. When you compare the wave function, you also have this fixed branching structure. And so this is pretty important. Yeah. Yes?
So that's integral form. In the end, you get some kind of like partition function.
Yeah, you can sum. Basically, what I try to say is that usually when you do this, you do sum over those index. But because the path integral do not depend on the index, so when you sum it, you just get the overall weighting factor, this group element. So all I have here, maybe I should say proportional. So it just there's overall weighting factor, so group element to some power. And the other is overall normalization factor, they're just the same.
You're saying it's proportional to wave function, actually?
Yes. Oh, this is usually true. That's the almost definition. That's the ground state, is it, because this is imagine time past integral. So the ground state is obtained by doing the past integral from minus infinity to current time. That's this imaginary passing goal just projecting to the ground states. Yeah. But once you write on this, we can actually you can see this one is a product state because there's another wave function which is just totally constant. The totally constant wave function means that on every vertex, we have a state we call the phi zero, which is a sum of all these group element states. Just equal the superposition of all these group element states, we call the phi zero. And then this wave function is just a direct product of phi zero states on every vertex. So therefore, the amplitude is always equal to one. There's no change. So this one is a product state. So here I want to say that this wave function differ by a local unitary transformation. Why? Because this wave function is this factor times one. And this one actually is a phi zero. So we can view those phase factor not as a phase, but as an operator. The operator acting on this wave function just give this. And the first, if you only look at the one term, the one term is a unitary operation because in the basis of because this one can be fixed, so these two are dependent on physical degree freedom. But if you choose the basis to be labeled by group element, it's just a change in the phase on this basis. Okay. But however, this is not quite a local unitary because the different unitary overlap. You know, local unitary transformation means a layer for non-overlapping unit transformation, and this doesn't work. But however, we can make it into several layers because each one is defined on the link. Certain different link, neighboring link share. But we can have an even link and odd link. Then on the even link, we can do one layer of this local unitary, which is non-overlapping, so that's a local unitary. Then have a second layer that's on the odd link. Again, non-overlapping local unitary. So therefore, the two layer of a local unitary would transform this wave function to the product states. So that's this is very important. That is, although this wave function looks non-trivial, but actually you can use in local unitary to map that into the product states. Yeah. So that's it. So this really tell us that using cocycle, we can really construct the path integral, we can construct the wave function, and the wave function is a local unitary.
Sorry, so I'm trying to understand what you just said. So you're saying that by using local unitary transformations on the boundary, we can...
No, not on boundary, on the space, which is the boundary of space-time. You know, the things are, when you say boundary, you could mean boundary of space, and that's not what we do.
Okay.
We're on the boundary of space-time, which is on the whole space. We can use local unitary on the whole space. And we can transform the wave function in the whole space into the product states.
Okay, so we do this local unitary on the boundary of space time, and that rearranges the internal degrees of freedom.
Yeah, you can say doing unitary transformation on the degree freedom, yes.
And that's how we transform this state that's entangled between the boundary of space time and the internal degrees of freedom to become this product state.
There's no, it's better not to say boundary of space time, just say space. We have a state on the space that's as any state,
mm-hmm.
which given by this wave function. This one looks complicated, but however, I'll try to say this wave function actually is a local unitary equivalent to the product states. And so usually we say that if a wave function are local unitary equivalent to a product state, we say they are trivial. But why here we say non-trivial in the following sense? You know, this new tool have a very important property that it has symmetry property. You know, when G act on GI, GJ, which is equal to itself. So they have symmetry. So that's a cochain condition. And then I want to say that this local unitary is not symmetric. Because if you do a symmetry operation, we would put a G here and a G here. That's a physical. But this G star is fixed. We don't put a G here. If you do that, this one is not the environment. If you insert G here and G here, this one is not the environment. So therefore, this is not a symmetric local unit transformation. This local unit transformation breaks the symmetry, do not commute with the symmetry. So therefore, using unsymmetric local unitary, we can map this wave function into the product state. But however, if we don't do that, then it doesn't work. Yes?
This maybe is a naive question. So I was wondering if we actually did this summation over G star.
We don't do summation. If you do the summation, it's the same thing. If you do the summation, not doing summation is the same thing. They only differ by the factor of group element.
Right, but I'm thinking that if we do the summation.
No, if you do the summation, this decomposition have a trouble. You can see only without summation, we can decompose into each layers. If we did have a summation, which seems to restore the symmetry, but then we can no longer decompose into the layer of local unitary. Because we have sum of a phase. Sum of phase don't work. It's very important that because you can remove the summation, this became pure product, no summation. Because a pure product is actually a layer of a local unitary. With summation, that won't work. So things fit together very tightly here.
So it's one or the other.
Yeah, one another. Yeah. And also you can see, you may say, if you put the G here, because using that you can shift the G here, but then it do not depend on G star. It looks like there's symmetry here. But yes, there is symmetry only when you have this overlapping local unitary. When you decompose it into the two layer of non-overlapping one, this symmetry is gone. So just everything fit very tightly. Yes.
That property that you wrote up there, you said it comes from the definition of cocycle.
This property.
The symmetry here.
Yeah, yeah. This also is cocycle. So actually, cocycle have two conditions. This is a cochain condition.
Cochain, sorry.
Yeah. So any function satisfy this, you call the cochain.
But most
then, if this cochain additionally satisfy this, we say they are cocycle.
Okay. So that condition we should have.
It's a part of cocycle. Cocycle is a special case of cochain. So cocycle satisfy both this condition and this symmetry condition.
So that one doesn't fall from that?
No, they're independent.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is a symmetry. This is a symmetry condition, happen to be cochain condition in the group cohomology. This happen to be there. And so this way we can see that. So with this, now we can just go on to the, yes?
So this condition that product of A for closed manifold equals 1.
Yeah.
Restrict topology, say if the product of F is 1 only for
this is a very, very good point, and so actually we will, in our next discussion, we may generalize this for the gauge theory, but this is very important, and this is also something we are a little bit confused, so this is, there's some confusion here. So since you raised this point, let me explain the confusion. The point is falling. Here we show that if this condition imply that on tetrahedral, the pattern is 1, then on some rich triangle, the tetrahedral also equal to 1. But can we show that this condition would guarantee that on any complex of any topology, the pattern also equal to 1? And we don't know. And this is very, very important, actually. And so what we know is that on two dimension, actually, for all the Riemann surface equal to 1, because we can go beyond sphere, because we can, it's falling. Starting from a sphere, okay, then we have another sphere, which is a cylinder. So this cylinder also a sphere because these two ends are covered. Okay. So we have two spheres. They're both equal to 1. Then we can glue this cylinder here, where this surface is counted twice. But when surface count twice with opposite orientation, they can cancel. So this surface here, gluing error may cancel and disappear. So then that means this gluing condition can add a handle to it. And because each equal to 1, so this combination also equal to 1. So torus also equal to 1.
So product of F equals 1 for every tetrahedron implies
equal to 1 for any Riemann surface in 2 dimension. But Michael Friedman told me that there's some strange topological space which cannot be obtained using this kind of gluing things from the sphere. And if that's the case, we don't know. But this is very, very important because here we say that this wave function have a shorter entanglement. So that's time to say that this kind of thing don't know about topology. So I try to link these two. They don't know about topology. So I'm hoping to say on any topological space-time, the passing is equal to 1. That means the wave function is shorter entanglement related. But however, if a certain topological space-time structure gave you a non-trivial partition function, well, that means there is some sense of a non-local or long-ring entanglement. That would be fine. But this happened to be the thing we don't understand very well. But I can only say that this equal to 1 imply the partition function equal to 1 on almost all the so-called simple topological space, which can be constructed by gluing spheres, which is, for physicists, that's a lot. But for some very strange topological space-time, if they're not equal to 1, what that means, I don't know. This is very, very important and interesting because that's maybe way to obtain topological invariants for this. Since partition always equal to 1, there's a difficulty here that it's hard to using partition function as topological invariants to characterize some system which is not fixed point. If this is not fixed point, we don't know how to detect them, so we have some difficulty here.
So, and then if say the product of is 1 only for torus, that does not imply product is equal to 1 for tetrahedron.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. At least so all the cosine condition actually means the partition function is 1 for simple spheres, the simplex. Then by gluing simplex together, whatever thing you can construct by gluing simplex, they also equal to 1. But unfortunately, this kind of gluing procedure do not produce all the possible topological space. So there are topological space not obtained from gluing them, and what are they? That's kind of fun. But this is a general thing that the long entanglement and the topological invariance is probably related. Yeah.
Those surfaces cannot be glued together. Is those surfaces orientable actually?
Yeah. This is implied by branching structure. All the manifold with branch structure is orientable. So on a non-orientable space, I think maybe there's for certain cases, there may be a hard time to define that. But this is also interesting. That is, for non-orientable space, for certain co-cycle, it can be defined on a non-orientable space. But for some other co-cycle, you cannot define on that. So what that means? So again, this is very interesting. So it seems like SPD state have two class. One can live on non-orientable space-time, another cannot. And what physically means? That's always a very interesting question. And so now let me just go on. Already if you have time. Try to explain the gauge theory. So the idea for gauge theory is very simple, actually. It's really this idea. It's that we can have some simple theory, which is a gap. Then we can add some kind of twist. This is like a 2 pi topological theta term. Just on the closed manifold, the action is the same as the simple one. But this twist may be non-trivial on the manifold with a boundary. So now we say, can we add this twist in gauge theory? So that is the main thing. We want to do the same thing to the gauge theory. So to describe gate theory actually is pretty simple. So let's describe gate theory. And so again, let's just two dimension. Okay. So to describe gate theory, it's important that on any link, space-time link, we have a group element. So in the space-time passenger gate theory, it's pretty simple. Instead of assigning the group element on the vertex, we assign group element on link. That's all. So that's a gate theory. Certainly, there's some convention. We have a branching structure. We have arrow. Each link have arrow. And certainly, this group element means go from here to here. We do the parallel transportation given by this group element. So that's basically that's a gate theory. So now you can see that with the gate theory, it's almost you can do the same thing. Okay. So therefore, the partition function of gate theory in space time is just a sum over all these links, so notation big G, and then the product some kind of phase, which depend on this ija, jk, ki, you know, something like that. Just this ij, jk, ki just a link. This ij, k, you know, it's just a link. Ik, so actually I should write ik because to be consistent with the convention for. So this is a KJ. No. Okay, maybe let's put a K here. J here. That's a better. IJ. That is a IK. This is a JK. Yeah.
So before the vertices were associated with points in space time, right? Hmm? Previously, the vertices were associated with points in space-time.
Yes.
So now the links, are they also associated with points
in space-time? They're connecting two points in space-time. So that is what the gate theory is. Gate theory is defined on the link because gate theory is a vector field. When you discretize the vector field, became this gij. It's just e to the I, integration from I to j is a vector field. So it's described in this way. Instead of using vector field to describe this, we're using this to describe the gate field. Okay. So then what is the simplest gate field? It will be F equal to 1, just like here. If you actually want the simplest gate field. But here things are a little bit more complicated. Because if you choose f equal to 1, that means the flux in each triangle can fluctuate randomly. The flux in each triangle is a product, it's a gij around this loop. If flux can fluctuate randomly, that means the gate field in the confined phase. And there's a sense that if gate field in the confined phase, it's not a gate theory. There's no gate group at low energy. I don't know what I'm talking about, but this is a thing which I feel we should look at this way. And so basically, it's a thing that the confined phase, it's just like Higgs phase. You know, Higgs phase means we can add a scalar field and a condensed scalar field to break gate symmetry. We can break gate symmetry completely. I try to say that if you have a Higgs phase, there's no gate group at the low energy. So we should not view this as a gate theory. I try to say that the confined phase is as bad as Higgs phase. So if this gate theory is totally confined, they will have nothing at the low energy. We should not view at the low energy this gate field. So to really think this is a gate theory at the low energy, we cannot say this. We can say f equal to 1 if this is a product of a gij equal to 1 and f equal to 0 otherwise. So this is different from nonlinear signal model. For nonlinear signal model, which the simple one just everything equal to 1, that's it. But here we have non-trivial dynamics in a sense. We say that if a flux on each triangle equal to zero, then you have amplitude. The path integral is okay, happy. If flux non-zero, they are zero. It's totally suppressed. So this condition allow us, under this condition say that G is a finite. So only when group is a finite, we can impose this easily. Otherwise, this product can be anything continuous. We have to put a delta function here. And the delta functions are very hard to define. It's not rigorous. So actually, for continuous group, it's harder. So I will not talk about that. It's doable. But for the simplicity, we'll limit ourselves to finite group. And then we can really impose this in a discrete sense. OK. And so once you do that, what we achieve is that a very simple gate theory, a lattice gate theory of finite group, where in the fixed point limit, where the flux, the vortex all suppressed. And this is well known that in the finite group gate theory, this vortex line carry finite energy. In the Lorentz limit, we can view this vortex line energy is pushed to infinity and suppressed. So in the fixed point, the lattice gate theory, a fixed point of a finite group lattice gate theory, just that, just this. The amplitude equal to one if the flux equal to zero, and amplitude equal to zero if flux not equal to zero. That's very simple. So therefore, this is like simple case of this situation. So now we ask, is this only, so this actually describe a deconfining phase of gate theory. So now we ask following question, can we twist this to obtain more deconfined phase of finite group gate theory? So that's the big question.
So for confinement phase, do you mean there's only one phase?
Maybe, I don't know. This is this bothered us for a long time, you know. At the moment, this is my understanding right now. This may change. Actually, my understanding changed just a week ago. If I gave this last week, and they gave a different picture. At the moment, my understanding is falling. If you do not break in a deconfined phase, then we have a full gauge group at a low energy. Then this is the gauge group we used here. So this gauge group actually is a low energy gauge group. Actually, this is a very important concept. You know, writing down the gauge theory with some gauge group at cutoff gate doesn't mean anything. If a low energy the theory has some property, which it can read off the gauge group from low energy measurement, and that is a true gauge group. And so I don't know how to do that. This, again, is very interesting research direction. You know, given a theory, how do you know from low energy measurement what is deconfined gauge group at low energy? How to determine that? This is a non-trivial thing. And here we do that formally, because I don't know how to do physical, I do that mathematical formally. I say, okay, I construct a model with this condition, then that's Lorentz gauge group is this. However, if there's some strong fluctuation, but strong fluctuation may not be in all the flux, maybe only in some flux direction, which only break gauge symmetry partially. Then I try to say, that's kind of like a go from here to here. The Lorentz gauge group is reduced. Then we should use a different unbroken gauge group here. Then I kind of think for the confining phase, maybe that's the picture. You know, if a confining phase break all the gauge symmetry, there's nothing. If some confining phase only break gauge symmetry partially, then this unbroken gauge group should be used to construct to do this discussion. But at the moment, this is my picture. You know, originally I'm thinking to use this to define the gapped confined phase, and now I'm no longer think that way. Yeah. So this describes a deconfined semi-classical phase. That is very important. Okay, and for the deconfined phase, once you have that, everything else will be almost a trivial to. Maybe let me just go down here. And so therefore we is equal to alpha 2 actually, Gij, Gjk, with some kind of a sign Ijk. Okay. So where is this alpha? Let me just write down the formula then. So alpha satisfies this condition. This seemingly is kind of complex, but actually it's very simple. This is very strange. You know, alpha just is element of is function of two group element, and it's satisfied this kind of weird equation. And so now here I would claim that this weird equation is nothing but this equation. And using alpha of this kind, one can construct this. One can show that this is a twist. So if you're using alpha of this kind, you can show this is a twist, which is so that the product of f would equal to 1 if this is on the if m is closed. So I kind of be very quick. Yes.
I don't understand what G1, G2, and G3 are in alpha 2.
No, it's the same. Just these two. You know, alpha just this have two. There's two just depend two variables. So here just we just this function is true for any choice of G1, G2, G3. But in this very strange combination, because everywhere you can see alpha only depend on two variables, but some may be product of other two. So For any choice of group three group element, this will satisfy. And this is the same as a cosine condition of this one. So to see this, actually, I think to see this and to understand all this, we can just map. We can map this Python integral into this Python integral directly. It's easy to explain. So instead of try to reformulate the group cohomology theory using alpha, we can just do the mapping and still using the new, using new here. To describe the gate theory. Yes?
Hi, in the cosine condition, then you have U2, G1, G2, G3 upstairs and downstairs. So how are they the same up and down?
U2, G3. No. Yeah, I make a mistake here. Here, drop 0 and I drop 1. Here I should drop 3. Yeah, this is 0, 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. 0, 1, 2. Yeah, thank you. Yes?
By mapping, you mean like some duality?
Yeah, so the mapping. So basically, this alpha is a cocycle. And the reason is that, so remember, our cocycle depends on this symmetry condition. So therefore, they don't really have three variables. They really only depend on two variables. We can use these two conditions to fix last variable equal to 1. So therefore, the independent degree of freedom is only just this. We only have this. This can be 1. Because they are the same, we can only choose a g to make it equal to 1. OK. But once we choose this equal to 1, and so let me try to get the formula I have. And then we can have the following relation. So actually the relation is this. This equal to alpha G1, G2. But however, the variable here is different. This is G2, this is G1 times G2. So this is relation. So actually the alpha can be expressed as this. And there's a very good geometrical meaning. So geometrical meaning is a falling. So let's say this. So maybe using the big G could be better. Okay. So for the new, we have this branch structure. So this is 0, 1, 2. Okay. So for the new, we put the group element at the second vertex to be one identity. Okay. Then we put this at here we have a G2. Here we have a G1, G2. Okay. Why? And then for alpha G1, G2, this alpha G1, G1 is from 0 to 1. So this is G1. And this is alpha, this is G2. Okay. So now let me explain. From a gate theory point of view, we have a variable on the link. But what about the variable on this link? Well, that's fixed by these two, because total flux on the triangle equal to 0. So if you know this equal to this and this, and this link is just product this in some way. So this one's fixed. So therefore, to describe a gauge configuration on a triangle, we don't need a third link, we only need two links. So therefore, the alpha only depend on these two variables, do not depend on the third one, because they are fixed. Okay. Then how to convert this variable on link to the variable on the vertex? It's very simple. We fix last vertex to be 1. Then just from 2 to 1, you know, all the vertex are ordered. So just from 2 to 1, not 2 to 1 only through this path. 2 to 1, we get 1 multiply G2, we get G2. Then from 1 to 0, but here we have G2. So from 1 to 0, go back, we multiply link here. We get G1 times G2 on this vertex. And that's it. So because on every this works in any higher dimension because all the vertex are ordered. Because branching structure. So from the top one, then one by one going down one by one, then you can specify. If you know the one on the link, then you'll know the one on the vertex, this mapping. And because once you have this mapping, it's very easy. We can use in the group cocycle new, which depends on link of vertex, to specify this rather than using the one on link. And that's it. That's the mapping. Okay, so that's almost end of story. Because once you understand this mapping, you know that you can twist. You can twist these simple things. Here you just say f equal to 1, f equal to 1, but we can twist it. F may not be equal to 1, f equal to something given by the cocycle. But once you do that, on any closed manifold, there's still this product is equal to 1, so you can twist it, a non-trivial twist. And so therefore, this is a deconfined gauge theory. We have many deconfined gauge theory, and their twist is classified by the group cohomology, which is the same thing as a HD. The D is space-time, so you have gauge group. So this is very important, it's an unbroken gauge group. Just like in symmetry case, unbroken symmetry. Here is a low energy gauge group. This is a low energy gauge group. Try to unfresh that as a low energy gauge group. Then it's classified by this. Yes?
Given the nature of the duality, given the nature of the duality used,
yeah.
Is there any difference between the two types of phases?
The two are totally different. Physically, they are very different.
But they are related by a lot of duality.
Yes.
At least a fixed point.
It's basically falling. I want to put the result this way. We have a totally different system, totally different face. But it happens that they have the same label. So we have a set of a trivial face called the shorter entangled face. And we have a set of a longer entangled face. For some amazing reason, these two sets have the same label. Enjoy can be labeled in the same way. But physics is so different. You can see for the shorter entangled space, the group is a symmetric group. It's something we know that we use to define a theory, that symmetric group. For this case, this group we use is some mysterious so-called Lorentz gauge group, which is harder to say what it really is. But if you can really specify what you mean by a gauge theory with a Lorentz gauge group, then we say this kind of gauge theory are classified by this.
So in particular, you won't be able to transform these theories, the gauge theories, into a local approach
state? No, not at all. And this one, all this discrete gauge theory, if you put on the torus, they have degeneracy and they have statistics now, building statistics and etc. But however, the making connection is very, very useful in a sense. You know, in the gauge theory, we can have an excitation which have non-zero flux. The excitation with non-zero flux will correspond to the have a non-abelian statistics and things like that. But however, this excitation with non-zero flux can be simulated in this SPD phase by doing the branch cut, where across branch cut, you're making this symmetry transformation. You say, on this branch cut, the things don't join directly. They join after I do a symmetry twist, then join them. So this kind of branch cut can simulate the flux excitation here. So that's led to this basically is a Gu and Levin's work. That is we can use a branch cut and they are now building statistics, try to characterize the SPD phase. And so this relation is very important. So this duality basically is that we can using the basically let me just write down. So actually I'm almost done. So it's that for SPD phase, we have this symmetry. Classify this symmetry. So this is SPT. And then for the gauge theory, we can use in the gauge group. That's a gauge theory. Okay. So the point is that we see that using this duality mapping, a classification of SPD phase can be turned into the classification of gauge theory if you do this duality mapping. Because we can using this co-cycle and using this kind of labeling to remap this SPD phase into a gauge theory. This is not local mapping, but you can do this mapping. Okay. So what Ying did is the following. Suppose we have a theory with a SPT phase with two groups. So this is SPT. Okay. We can do duality mapping by turning both groups into the gauge group. Then we can get how to classification gauge theory whose gauge group is G1 times G2. But what Ying did is that let's do a duality mapping only for G2. You can do that. And if you do that, then G2 became gauge group, but the G1 remained the same, the symmetry group. And that's it. So therefore, when you have a gauge theory with a symmetry, it can be classified this kind of stuff. So that's basically the understanding. So in some sense, it's pretty straightforward. But this the consequence will be amazing because I don't have time, certainly. There is a Knish formula. I don't know whether kind of, is that something like that? There's a Knish theorem which computes this kind of a cohomology, in terms of cohomology of G1 and G2 separately, you know. And so therefore, this Quinch formula have a lot of structures. And this structure now all have a physical interpretation now. Because the first group is a Simic group, second group is a gauge group, and all this, how you join this structure together, you have a, so there's a lot of fun, actually. And so this is a, so you can live with this. Okay, so basically, that's it. So certainly, there's a lot of story and difficulties to try to generate this to continuous group, which can be done. Actually, that's a main part of a digraph written paper. So here, we learn this kind of digraph written, the last part of digraph written, which is for the discrete group. But for continuous group, things can also be done. And but the meaning for that is just like Song said's question is that I think in three dimensions, these kind of things led to the Chern-Simon theory for continuous group. But for the higher dimension, this additional twist do not open up mass gap. Because continuous group in 2+1 dimension is a gap even for the trivial case. Because you have this polygon multiple argument. But when you twist it, you get Chern-Simon theory. So therefore, for this result, in three dimension for continuous group, if this is continuous, then the trivial phase corresponds to the confined, the Polyakov confined phase. But non-trivial element corresponds to Chern-Simon theory. And we try to do this for 4 or 5. Then we have trouble. Because in the 4 or 5, in the semi-classical limit, the continuous group theory is gapless. So I tend to say this is I'm a little bit worried, but I tend to say that you can twist the gapless theory. And the twist of gapless theory describes this. But what that means, what they really give, is not clear. So therefore, for this classification, in higher dimension, the meaning is totally different. So there could be a classification of gapless theory for the continuous group. And at the moment, this is what I tend to think, but I'm not sure it's really correct or not correct. So so this will be a lot of maybe some further stuff for continuous group, whether this offer the way to classify gapless theory. Yeah. So okay, I think I should stop here. Yeah.
I saw that in this SPD case, the symmetric group, you can have continuous group, right? Like SO3. But you have duality mapping from gauge symmetric group back to this
You can see for the continuous
indeed. You say that the gauge group is
For the continuous group, SPD phase also is very delicate, as I mentioned. Because for the continuous group, we cannot choose this function to be continuous function. We have to choose this function to be Borel measurable function to produce right result. This is very delicate stuff to produce right classification. And this duality mapping seems, I'm not sure this duality mapping really works or not works. You know, idea there. But for continuous group, there's a lot of delicate thing about this measurable function, this measure zero thing with discontinuity, and those kind of shuttle cases. So I don't know whether things go through or not. But there is a lot of fun. For the SPD phase, I feel more confident this Borel measurable function gave rise classify SPD phase. But to map that to the continuous group in gauge theory, we have to handle this kind of thing. You know, mapping require this. You know, if the product of a connection is not equal to zero, we cannot say link variable here is given by the link variable on these two. We have a third independent link variable. So even the number of variables cannot map together. So therefore this mapping fails for continuous group. And for continuous group, it's hard to have a condition. This is a delta function, which is on every triangle, the flux be exactly equal to zero, although the flux is continuous group. But specific flux be exactly zero is a little bit strange. And so there's a lot of this dynamical question like that.
But is it clear that on the gauge symmetry side, if I do a duality mapping from the discrete gauge group map to this symmetry group of the original SP
yeah.
case, is it
for
discrete
group,
discrete to discrete,
I think everything is solid. And the continuous group, we have a good story for SPD phase, and we don't have a good story for the gauge theory part. And so this is some kind of difficulty we are facing. We're kind of writing a paper with the ex postdoc here. And this kind of thing we struggle. The result is there, but how to tell the story, how to put the result in some form which is reasonable.
So one more question. Say, suppose I consider the system described by a Hamiltonian with some symmetry group.
Yeah.
And also there's a gauge symmetry of a low energy Riemann symmetry from the gauge group. Then the picture I consider for the path integral form is actually there are two pages of space-time lattice, right? One is for the gauge symmetry one, which is defined by the link.
Well, I see. Indeed. There's something, this G would belong to G1, and the one on the verb link would belong to G2 for this case. So you can imagine, just do mapping for half of them, you can easily write down the path integral to really realize this.
I saw if there's a duality mapping, then
the
two of them are constrained, right?
Yeah.
But
so basically this more general case is just I put a variable both on the link and on the vertex. And the variable on the link was treated as a gauge group variable. Then you can get this. You can really get the path integral.
Just one page, one evolution.
Yeah, just one. It's just the way of assigning variable different.
Yeah.
Okay. And certainly you can also assign variable on the face. Then there's a more story. So there's a lot of generalization for this. So things are became wide open after this idea. Yes.
So this mapping from link variable.
Yeah.
Just one-to-one locally, but globally not one-to-one.
Yeah, that's maybe very, very important because this should be non-local mapping. So that's how you map the Schrödinger entangled state to Lambda entangled states. And so it's just some tricks to write down the path integral in either case. I don't really call duality mapping a mapping. I don't know if you want a trick or whatever. Duality relation, you're like illegal mapping physically because you're changing the locality of the problem. Yeah. But it's very useful tricks to see the connection between different theories.
So maybe one topological sector.
That could be, yeah. If you really think about at the wave function level, how the wave function, can wave function have a one-to-one mapping? The answer is yes. We know that for the topological theory, actually that's what David Gelta talked to me last time. In the topological theory, you can using this Grand degeneracy and this modular transformation to classify the topological theory. And then the question is that when you do the mapping for SPD phase, you only have one state on the torus. You know, where there's no degeneracy, there's no modular transformation. But you can have more by twisting boundary condition. So actually, the different degenerate ground state in the gauge theory correspond to the SPD phase and the torus. But you by hand, you assign different boundary condition along the X cut and the Y cut. And presumably, this kind of a by hand state can again by hand form this SPD phase this modular transformation. So this may actually I think that this idea should work. That is using this when you have a symmetry, using the branch cut of the symmetry to create a degenerate state, and using that as topological invariance.
Okay.
to classify SPT phase. And this, so there's possibility one can have this modular group classification SPT phase in a more physical way by doing this boundary condition, which it twists by symmetry. That's right. You know, for the gauge, for the degenerate from the gauge theory, really coming from the global flux, and that's correspond to the branch cut in the SPT phase. So therefore, understanding this, so all this is not local. It's kind of illegal, but however, it still gave you ideas that using these non-local things, you probably can design some kind of calculation even from SPT. Okay, maybe it's lunchtime.